The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I'm okay, you're okay, but your kid could be obnoxious. Remember that book? Came out in the 70s, I'm Okay, You're Okay. One of those big self-image type pushing books. This is not Look Back Friday, for those of you who follow the show closely, which narrows it down to about 18 of you. Normally, on Friday, we take past calls and I embellish and extrapolate, add to. This is a live show. Every so often we do a live show on Friday because there are folks who say, I can only listen on Friday. I'd like to call in. Okay, this is for you. This is Listen Up Friday, 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal is the live number to call. Many of you have to adjust your expectations because you're thinking, well, no, on Look Back Friday, we can't call in. Well, you can now. You can certainly call in. Question about something in your life, the stuff of existence, something about faith and psychology you don't understand. I do better on the psychology stuff, but I'm learning more on the faith stuff, listening to all of these very, very thoughtful, knowledgeable people through the EWTN Broadcasting Network, as well as many of the other places like Catholic Answers, and even the local affiliates have some really, really smart people that I take their stuff and use it and put it in books and make money. Thank you. Would that make me a technological money changer in the temple? I hope not. So, any questions regarding kids, marriage, circumstances, difficult people? Be careful about tagging somebody as a difficult person. Because remember, in their eyes, you could be the difficult one. And that's probably the way it is. Because difficult people don't see themselves as difficult. So if they're difficult, they're looking at you as you're the difficult one. Just understand that. May not be true, but understand that could be the way they see it. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. There is, I call it the cliche phenomenon. The cliche phenomenon is that people with letters after their names, who are self-declared experts, and generally are given the status of experts by the public at large, come out with all kinds of theories and notions. And that's what they are. They're theories and notions. They aren't true just because somebody with letters after their name says they're true, or even just because somebody with a whole bunch of letters and a whole bunch of somebodies with letters after their name say that they're true. This is all over the place in psychology, in parenting. It's all kinds of ideas that are put out that if you do it this way, this is what's going to happen because this is why you're wrong. Or if you do it this way, that's unenlightened. There is one that I've talked about before in this show, and I'm going to embellish it a little bit today. This is one of the great cliches. It really has no research support whatsoever. It just kind of has a sort of sounds like it could be the case. I was speaking to a group of educators. This was some years ago. A fellow pretty much routinely brought me in to speak. He was an individual who offered psychological services to various Catholic schools. And every so often, he would have me talk to the teachers from the schools. It came up that I happened to recommend writing an essay to ponder what you did as a piece of behavior that you could have done differently, that why it might have been wrong. Can you use the word wrong? I think we still can, although the experts don't like you to use the word wrong, you know. Value judgment. See, that's not one of those cliches. And I suggested this, and he came up to me afterwards, and he said, really, Ray, I don't want you to do that. Now, he's a psychologist, too. I said, why is that? He said, well, you know, obviously, we want children to love writing. And if you're going to pair writing with some kind of discipline consequence, all we're doing is we are negatively toning writing. And I said, uh-huh. Now, he believed that. And I would have to acknowledge that is probably a dominant cliche, even though there's no research for it anywhere. And I'm going to show you why it's not true. In politics, oftentimes the quote-unquote savvy move is to pit one group against another group. Unfortunately, what happens is when these groups clash, now you got a problem. And that's an example of what's happening in this writing cliche. There is another notion in parenting theory, parenting notions, parenting ideas, that say, let the discipline fit the crime, which is really very hard to do, by the way. If you stop and think about it, very hard to let the discipline fit the crime, because much behavior doesn't lend itself well to a concomitant consequence, like using those big words. This is one of those. Probably the best thing that would fit the crime for disrespect would be a written essay talking about the disrespect, talking about why it's wrong, talking about what you could do otherwise. However, the notion is if you make someone right, you will automatically turn them off toward writing. And let me proceed to I was going to say tear that apart, but again, violent language. Take that apart. Now that's even that's kind of borderline violent. Let me proceed to unravel. Yeah, that's a little better, isn't it? That particular cliche. I was talking to a group of teachers once, and somebody brought that objection up. They said, don't use my course, because she taught, I think, English literature, or she taught literature or grammar or English or some related subject. Don't use my course as punishment. I said, why is that? She said, well, you're forcing children against their will to do something, and that makes it distasteful. I said, okay. How many children in your classes? And she had four or five classes, and she said 100. I said, okay. At the beginning of the year, are you willing to tell the children, anyone in here who does not wish to write does not have to write? Your grade will not depend upon you turning in assignments. I mean, assignments in and of itself is a force, right? I'm assigning you something. And if you don't do the assignment, you're going to get an F. See how I didn't use the proper grammar in that? I was just trying to be cliche. I said, would you be willing to tell the class that you, in fact, do not want to force anybody to write under penalty of bad grade? And therefore, if they choose not to, they don't have to. If they want to, you hope they will enjoy writing, and they will turn those in just for the sheer enjoyment of it and the positivity of the whole experience. Now, she looked at me like I was a total idiot. Now, she should have looked at me before that, because I said a lot of other things she could have looked at me as a total idiot for. But that particular one, she had no response to, because she knew she wasn't going to do that. But let me take it out a step further. In any competence that you want to develop, what do you have to do to develop that competence? Whether it's figure skating, piano playing, basketball, cliff diving. It's tough to develop competence in cliff diving because you can't screw up once. Really hard to make a comeback in cliff diving if you screw up once. What do you have to do? You have to practice. That's what you have to do. Do you always like to practice? I've written a lot of books. The hardest thing I do is write. By far, it's harder than doing the show. It's harder than speaking in public. It's harder than seeing clients. Writing is the toughest piece of discipline I have to do, other than mowing the lawn. Can't get my wife to do it as much as she used to. I don't know what I'm paying her for. There was a story of a writer who basically said he was offering a course, and all these young budding writers showed up. He got up, and you know what he said? You want to learn how to write? Leave here. Go home and write. He was basically saying, you got to practice. My first book took me 3 years to write. I was in middle school, but since then, the average book has taken about a year. Squeeze it in between other stuff. It's practice. It's just practice. You get better at doing it. My oldest son and daughter wrote more than their share of essays. A lot. They had to write a lot of essays. They were homeschooled and they wrote a lot, forced against their will to write these things. Both of them got 36s on their ACT verbal. Why? Because they had to do a lot of writing. That's why. My son's an engineer. And from the word I get, he's usually asked to write a lot of the particular proposals or articles. Why? Because he can write. This is a cliche. This makes no sense. It's absolutely absurd, but it shocks me how many people buy into it, especially the intelligentsia. Don't make somebody write. I had an English teacher that I thought would agree with this, and when I got her in an interview, she disagreed. She said, don't use my subject. I said, well, wait a minute. All of academics is at some level a force. I'm going to force you to do these mathematical problems or you're going to flunk. I'm going to force you to do your homework or you're going to flunk. Well, it used to be that way. It's not that way anymore. You know, everybody gets a trophy now. Everybody gets an A. One final thing. I'll share this with you. A dear lady listens to this program. Hope she still does. Haven't heard from her in a while. From Poland. I think by now she has her PhD in a literary field. I've seen her emails. They are just brilliantly written. She wrote me because she had heard me talk somewhat similar about this subject. And she said, I had that experience in one of my graduate writing classes. The professor came in and said, all of you are looking at some level at a career in writing. So I am not here to force you to write. Here are the assignments. This is what we will be doing. And you turn these assignments in if you wish. Your grade will not depend upon you turning in the assignments. You are all grown-ups. You shouldn't have to have me force you under penalty of letters. Oh, she said everybody was so excited at first, being treated like adults, recognizing that indeed their career was going to be in writing. She said that lasted about a month. Thereafter, some of the assignments weren't tuned in. Why not? Well, other stuff. They had other stuff to do. You know, the first place they were going to get slack was a class where you don't have to turn in any assignments. She said she was shocked, but she was not surprised. The human condition. There was no one essentially saying to these graduate students majoring in a literary field to say, you need to do this. And if there was no one to do that, they didn't do it. So watch out for that cliche, because that's all it is. It's a major league cliche. And there are so many benefits to writing besides the fact of practice, but I don't have time because I'm looking at the clock and I am way past break. 877 57 equal. This is not Look Back Friday. This is Listen Up Friday. I'm here talking to you, fielding. That's not too violent, is it? Fielding your questions.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilino with a few words about St. Clement of Rome. St. Clement was a disciple of Saints Peter and Paul, and he succeeded St. Peter as Bishop of Rome. We have a long letter he wrote to the people of Corinth in Greece. It shows that already in the first century, the Pope's authority extended overseas and the people there accepted it gratefully. The Church's life remains the same today.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
From Karen Kingsbury Productions comes Someone Like You.
It's a beautiful morning.
I fell in love with London Quinn in high school.
When everything is lost,
I'm so sorry.
Love will lead you home.
You can't bring her back, man.
Do I look like London?
She always wanted me to find someone like you.
Thank God I do.
Someone Like You. This film is not yet rated. In theaters April 2nd. More information is available at someonelikeyou.movie.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything? Even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swain is available on a lot of our EWTN affiliates. Monday through Friday, 6 Eastern Time. Anna Mitchell, Matt Swain, start off the day with news, interviews from a good Catholic perspective. Just wanted you to know all about that. Now, this next call is, I feel a lot of pressure on this call because she has never heard the show before. And I could either gain another listener or lose a listener forever, depending upon what I say. Jasmine from New York. Hi, Jasmine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. It sounds like you're getting a little overloaded there.
Yeah, it's true. And I've never heard your show, but you said some perfect stuff, you know. And
well, as long as you're going to say I say perfect stuff, you can keep calling in.
You hit the nail on the head. So, you know, I'm traveling today for a doctor's appointment, history of cancer. So, done it all. Oncology, including chemo and radiation. And I have a 14-year-old, and I'm married for the first time at 60 years old because I just didn't meet the right person. Marriage is good. I would say we're done of that honeymoon phase, but my issues are I just don't feel understood. I have difficulty multitasking now more than ever because of the medication. And like I said, you're hitting the nail on the head. I have a 14-year-old who's lovely, a girl, and she's in the ninth grade, new school. Everything's new for us, but she's younger, so having to deal with those changes, it needs to be acknowledged. But I, too, have had changes and packing up a house and selling it and all, but I just don't feel understood. And your broadcast, I'm really not sure of the mix. It seems like a mix of psych, mix of religion, and
you got it.
Communications.
You
style.
Got it. You picked it up that quick.
Well, it seemed, like I said, hit the nail right on the head. So,
well, let me give you the first suggestion I would have regarding you feeling better or wanting to be understood. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, this is a big one. You might want to write this down because of its brilliance. Don't worry about being understood. Ha! Am I professional or what? Here's why. Jasmine, you cannot control how other people are going to assess what you're going through. You're in chemo. You know as well as I do that's going to fuzz up your brain. You know that. You know you're not going to function at 100%. You're going to probably function at about 63%. They don't get that. Or many of them don't. And you think to yourself, I wish they would. Give me some credit here. I'm juggling six plates. What's with you people? Am I off so far or am I on so far?
Well, it's more like a 33rd portion okay. for plates. And I already did the chemo, so I'm 8 months, 8 years out. I'm 8 years out.
Okay, good. Good.
And the thing is, I would liken it to maybe brain injury. So I look fine, but there are residual effects that people just can't take note of. But
and you, Jasmine, you don't need them to, dear. You don't need them to take note of it. You are who you are. I don't know if you're a religious woman or not. If you're a religious woman, you're a child of God. God knows. Mm-hmm. If you're not a religious woman, the principle still applies. Because if there is a God, he knows the best way to live, whether you believe in him or whether you don't. And one of the best ways to live is not to put yourself at the mercy of what other people understand about you, because you can't control that. And so if you say to yourself, they don't understand that chemo and 8 years post-chemo, my brain is kind of fuzzy here. I wish they'd give me a little bit of flexibility on this. And you'll find out, Jasmine, that there are those, and maybe it's just a few, who will do that. And those are the people you understand. They understand you. But other than that, many people are caught up in their own existence. Many people are caught up in their own opinions. And they look at somebody like yourself and they think, well, you know, come on, man. There's a lot of things about you you could really improve on here, Jasmine. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So you're giving them way too much power. Holy mackerel. You're letting them.
Well, you have to be able to communicate.
Well, yeah, you do, but you are communicating. That's not your complaint. Your complaint is I'm communicating and they're not understanding.
True.
See, so
yes,
when you say
100%.
Well, I'm perfect again. When you say they got to understand and I need to be able to communicate. No, you're already communicating. Communicating doesn't mean understood. It just means saying it the best you can. You can't control what they understand or what they agree with or what they accept or what they absorb. You can't do that. So as long as, my dear, you keep this idea that they do not really read me accurately, as long as you have that idea, you're going to make yourself pretty upset. Because you can never know in a situation the day after tomorrow that something happens and somebody gives you feedback that, you know, I just don't get you. I don't get you. I don't know why you did that. I don't know what's with you. So that is probably a key mindset you're going to have to work on.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to reading your book because, you know, with parenting, though, you still have to stand tall.
Yes,
you
do.
You still need to try to instill morals. And I think because I faced my own mortality, I'm a different person now, much more than I think I ever would have been. I don't mind that I had cancer. I think it was, like, actually one of the best things that ever happened. To me, it wasn't a bad experience, you know. But if you know, because we all will leave this earth, right? So I already just had it staring in my face years ago. So a lot of my teachings, though, I try to instill with my daughter, who's very, very smart, very, very good. But that you have we have accountability and responsibilities. We have to be accountable and we have responsibilities.
Jasmine, I appreciate your call. I'm going to have to cut you off because I got about 20 seconds on a hard break's coming. Let me leave you with this. If, in fact, your illness made you look toward infinity, made you consider the whole question of God and your relationship with him, then I agree with you. That illness, which we here on earth would look as a tragedy, you have said it is something that turned my eyes in the right direction. Jasmine, thank you for the call. 877-57-EQUAL. I got some calls up there. Robbie, I know you're there. First time you listened in 20 years. Took you long enough.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Do you know what your diocese, what your church, what your parish is doing to help families in need? Women who feel they're in a desperate situation and for whatever reason, God forbid, may consider abortion. This is not difficult. The information is out there. We have to become more aware, and we have to be willing to not only know about what's available, but to do something about the issues. It's not just up to, quote unquote, the church. We're all part of the church, and we're all called to put our faith into action, or else we will be guilty of having a dead faith, as St. James reminds us. So first things, be aware, and then be willing to do something.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
What does Oratio Dominica mean? It refers to a prayer that is, according to the Catholic Catechism, truly unique. It is of the Lord. As the only Son of God the Father, Jesus, in speaking the words His Father gave Him, is the master of our prayer. In addition, as Word incarnate, Jesus, in His human heart, knows the needs of His human brothers and sisters. In revealing them to us, He is also the model of our prayer. Jesus, however, does not merely give us a formula to repeat mechanically. Jesus not only gives the words of the Our Father, He gives us the Spirit by whom the words become in us spirit and life. The prayer to Our Father is inserted into the mysterious mission of the Son and the Spirit. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Expanding your superego while shrinking your id. Little Freudian lingo there. This is not Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls. This is taking calls in the reality of the moment. This is Listen Up Friday. The number is 877-57-EQUAL. I shouldn't have to tell you that. It should be kind of scattered around your house for emergency purposes. Now, there are a couple ways to go straight to the front of the line. One of them is to disagree with me. One of them is to be on the program at the end of a previous show, waiting patiently. And another way, which I've decided is going to be a big one, is when you tell me I'm right, which is what I think Marie's going to do from Santa Fe, which is the capital of New Mexico. People think it's Albuquerque. It's not Santa Fe. Hi, Marie.
Hi there. How are you?
I am doing pretty good there, young lady.
Great.
So you want to tell me
I'm right? Say, thank you for taking my call. Oh, well, here's why I believe that you're right, okay?
You know why? Wait a minute. You know why you think I'm right? I'll tell you why you think I'm right. Are you ready?
You are.
Because you agree with me. That means you think you're right.
Okay, so I have three boys, okay? My oldest is 26, my middle one is 22, and my youngest is 15 and a half. And when my oldest was about 17... he didn't want to do the hard work. He didn't want to go to the honors classes. He didn't want to do this. And I said, that's fine. I know how smart you are. You can sit there on the couch and eat Cheetos if you want to. I will love you 100%, but you're not raising your potential. Guess what? He's a valedictorian. He's an aerospace engineer. The middle one.
Well, you didn't let Marie, you didn't let him sit on the couch eating Cheetos, did you?
No, but I'm saying you can do it. I mean, I can't tell you any more to raise to your potential.
Was this when he was in high school?
So you need to raise to your potential. He cried. He cried like a baby.
What was this? Was he in high school?
Yeah, he was 16. Yeah, he was 16. And sorry. He was in middle school. And then my middle one, who now is 22, saw this sort of stuff that I have got these expectations. And and some people are going to disagree with what I say here in just a second, but he is, he's the youngest PhD candidate for a PhD in chemistry. He's literally brilliant. I mean, literally brilliant, you know, like an IQ of 180 or something.
Do you do you realize how smart he would be had your husband's genetic not watered him down?
I like that. I like that. So then my third one and is, like I said, 15 and a half at this point, and I caught him vaping. Okay. So two of my kids have type 1 diabetes, the middle one and the youngest one. Okay. And I said, here's the deal. And I said, get out of the house right now. I said, get your insulin, get out of the house and leave right now. Give me your phone. And obviously within 30 minutes, I was running down the street trying to find where he was. but all of the parents were disagreeing with what I did. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
Let me jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because you said something earlier that I really need to check into.
Okay.
You said when that oldest boy, who is now doing phenomenally well professionally and academically, was in middle school and he was slacking, you essentially said, okay, I can't make you work, but if you're going to sit on the couch and eat Cheetos, you're going to pay the price. Is that right? Am I summarizing that correctly?
You are, but he understood what it was coming from, that's really not acceptable, but it's up to you. You need to take responsibility.
Okay, wait a minute. That's where I'm confused.
Yeah, okay.
In other words, you did a very risky thing.
Yes.
Many parents do this. They'll say, well, look, up to you. Sink or swim, pass or fail. I'm not going to get myself. That's a very risky thing you did. It worked out for you, but I would not recommend that to other parents. And the reason is your son at age 12 or 13, whatever he was, could have said, great, I'll take the hit, because you didn't put any meat behind it. You didn't say, if you don't do these things, here's what I'm going to do.
I did say that, though, Dr.
Okay,
Ray.
Well, you
I
left
said,
that part
I'm not
out.
Pay for your school. I'm not going to pay for private school anymore. I'm not going to do this. You're not going to have, whatever it is that you think.
Okay.
I mean, literally.
All right. You know, so you said, basically, I'm going to cut back your perks if you do
exactly.
not do. Okay. You left that part out.
Okay,
that was a big part to leave out, which is.
I'm just trying to talk fast because I know you have so many callers that want to talk to you. So I'm just trying to say, you know, if you're going to sit there and say you think that forcing somebody to do something is abusive, you're just wrong, especially for the child. I've never even, I don't believe in corporal punishment, never once. I've got three beautiful boys. And the thing that people most will disagree with is that when I caught the youngest one vaping and I said, get out.
Well, you didn't really say get out, Marie. You bluffed. You said get out, and then you ran after him half an hour later. So you didn't really say get out.
No, but I couldn't find him, though. He was, and so finally I got a call from his best friend's mom and said, hey, he called me, and I'm at the park, and I picked him up, and he's fine. And I said, good. And I said, keep him there at your house then.
All righty. I got to let you go, honey, because I got to get some more calls, but thank you.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just need to say you're correct.
Thank you for agreeing with me because you agree with you. I appreciate that, Marie. Robbie, how are you, my friend? Hey, Robbie, now I'm going to go up against a hard break here in a second, but I just want you to confirm one thing for our listening audience. Are you willing to do that?
I am.
Okay. We used to work out together, right?
We did.
Was I as tough as I talk like here in lifting weights?
You were the Hulk Hogan of weightlifting.
Ah, Robbie, I knew I should have taken your call sooner. I knew I should have it.
Well, can I be honest with you?
Sure.
I just wanted to tell you and all your listeners that I'm in the reality of the moment.
And I am going to get together with you and your neighbor, Pastor. I definitely am, Robbie. I've been in and out of town forever. And we miss you there. We went over to the North Canton Y now. We're not at the CYC anymore. You went over with the big boys at the Powerhouse, right?
Well, I took what you instilled in me, and I wanted to share it with others.
So you are being an evangelist over there among those meatheads?
I'm a man among boys.
Well, keep this in mind, Robbie. You know, when you used to lift with us, you were a young kid, and now you're probably in your 50s. So you got those 25-year-olds looking at you like, what's the old man doing in here?
No, actually, they just bully me.
they kick weights in your face, not like they used to do in the back of the comic books, you know, the Joe Weider advertisements.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's uncanny how you know these things.
Well, you know, my brother Mike was using the 115s on the dumbbells.
Yeah.
And he was getting like 10, 12, 15 of them. So he's a freak of nature, you know, especially at 170
pounds. Yeah, he does have the genetics.
Yeah, that's what it is. And my mom didn't give me those genetics, so I threatened to sue her. But my attorney said that the statute of limitations probably has expired. Robbie, stay there because I want to take your question, okay? Stay there through the break. 877-57-EQUAL. We got time for more. This is not Look Back Friday. This is Listen Up Friday, because every so often we do a show where I take your calls, because on Fridays, some people can only call in on Fridays. Some people can only listen on Fridays. Nobody listens on Saturdays.
'60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The fifth commandment, you shall not kill. At the heart of this commandment is an absolute insistence on the sacredness of human life. We read in Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, "Before I ever formed you in the womb, I knew you, says the Lord." So every human life is sacred because it's caught up in the mind and the heart and the will and the love of God. And no matter how we're conceived or any circumstances, God has always known and loved every human person. And for this reason, we are to hold sacred every human life. We are, therefore, to never murder, never kill, never seek vengeance. Of course, we have issues of abortion and euthanasia today, and we have so many ways where we in some way disrespect the lives of other human persons, and even our own life. We have to learn to respect it as a great gift from God. The fifth commandment, you shall not kill.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 11, verses 21 to 26. This is the story of Lazarus. Lazarus has died. Lazarus is one of his best friends. Just before this passage, we hear the news that Martha and Mary send word to Jesus that the one you love is sick. And the next line in the scripture is, "Now because Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was. His friend's in need, he can heal, they've seen him heal before, and yet somehow because he loves him, he stays, and Lazarus dies." And then Jesus shows up 3 days later and is greeted by Martha and Mary, who confront him with the words, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would never have died." Rather applicable for many of us in our lives. We ask the Lord to do one thing because we're certain it is what we think is best, when in fact he has something which far surpasses what we ask for. The challenge is, in waiting for that to happen, we go through very trying times, which oftentimes makes us wonder, does he really care?
It's your chance to be a star. Your big debut. You've heard about the movie The Incredible Shrinking Man. Well, you are tuned into The Incredible Manly Shrink. Very nice to have you with me. It's Listen Up Friday. We're taking your calls. I hope Robbie is still there. Rob, you still there?
Brother.
Okay. So your question is, and this is probably when I was out of the Catholic Church for about 8 years, this, of course, was one of the main cliches thrown at Catholics, because they would say, "Well, it's not in the Bible." Blah, blah, blah. So your question, why do Catholics believe in purgatory, correct?
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's take this from, there's nine different layers we could take this from, Robbie. Let's just take it from some simple ones. First of all, the word purgatory is not in the Bible. Of course, neither is Trinity. And, of course, neither is abortion. So much of what Christians believe is not in the Bible in those terms. Personal relationship with Jesus Christ is not in the Bible. Welcome Jesus into your heart is not in the Bible. So let's just get past this whole idea. There's no word purgatory in the Bible. There's not a whole bunch of other words in the Bible. That's one. Secondly, when somebody says, "Where is that in the Bible?" what they are really saying is every single belief that the Christian church has believed from the time of Christ and the apostles has to be written in the Bible. That's starting off with a premise making the rules, because the early church didn't even have the Bible. They didn't have a printing press until the 15th century. The faith was taught. That's two. Three, what Bible? For example, up until Martin Luther decided there were several books that didn't belong in the Old Testament, one of which he removed, there was a verse in Maccabees that says, it is a holy and wholesome thought to pray for the dead, that they might be loosed from their sins. Oops, that sounds pretty purgatorial, but that's okay, because non-Catholics would say, well, that's not in our Bible. Those books are not there. Well, those books were there when the church in the 4th century said, this is our Bible. But there are also, for example, verses in the New Testament. St. Paul, he says something like, your works could be burned up as wood, hay, and stubble, but I will survive as though going through fire. There's a verse in Revelation that says, nothing with sin shall stand before a holy God. Well, wait a minute. Well, if we die, I don't know about you, Robbie, but I still got sins in me. And so the church has always said that, yes, there is some kind of condition. It is a state. I don't know, could be a place. The church never really said that. But they said there is a purification where we come face to face with who we are and what we did. And we are made pure. One more point. At the time of Christ, the Jews had something called the Mourner's Kaddish. Devout Jews prayed for the dead. They had an 11-month period where they prayed for the dead. This isn't proof, but it's indicative. Jesus never said, what are you doing? Come on, man. The dead are, you know, they're straight with my Father. You don't have to pray for them anymore. Come on, they're in. No, that was Jewish practice. He never addressed it. He never corrected it. Okay, here's another verse that's thrown at people. When Jesus was on the cross, and the good thief said, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus said, this day you shall be with me in paradise. Well, of course, that doesn't mean there's no purgatory, because there's no time after death. So a purgatorial purification could take place in a nanosecond. 1 × 10⁹ seconds, by the way. So that's meaningless. And then St. Paul, in one of his letters, says to be absent from the body is to be present with Christ. Uh-oh, see that? There's no place else. You're absent from the body, you go straight to Christ. Well, that doesn't imply that there isn't any kind of purification state. That doesn't say that at all. But those are the kinds of verses that are flung, and the other verses are ignored. Plus, one more thing. The early church, going back to all the writings we have from the early church as they understood Christianity, prayed for the dead. So there you have it, Robbie. A whole bunch of answers to this idea that, oh, you Catholics, why did you add purgatory? Come on, man, that's nowhere in the Bible. And I say to people, are you pro-life? And they'll say, well, yes, I'm pro-life. I'd say, well, find me in the Bible where it says you do not kill a baby in the womb. About the only place is in the Old Testament where it says if two guys are fighting and the pregnant woman is somehow, some way, loses the baby because of this conflict, they have to pay a fine or something. Well, wait a minute. That's murder. So why wouldn't the Bible say, whoa, wait a minute, you, that's manslaughter, man. You killed a baby. Not maybe with intent, but you did. Didn't say that. And as a matter of fact, there's nothing in the New Testament that specifically says life begins at conception. We do not kill a child in the womb. But that was a teaching of the very, very earliest church from the beginning. So Nancy Pelosi did not know what she was talking about when she said the Catholic Church really wasn't sure about abortion being a moral wrong. She totally was clueless on that. And I'm not being political. I'm just simply saying that particular person totally misrepresented the Catholic Church and history. There you have it, Rob.
I feel better already.
You sound smarter. You sound smarter than when you first called.
A little bit more intellectual, you would say.
Yes, yes. I'd say your IQ probably spiked 10, 12 points. Now, when you hang up. But by the way, my friend, you know, back when we lifted, I was on the air. And it took you 20 years to finally tune in?
Well, I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up.
Yeah, okay. Well, don't blame me if you're slugging your way through your IQ. Don't blame me.
But I'm looking at the bright side that it didn't take 21.
You've learned stuff already, Rob. God bless you, my friend. We miss you. We do miss you. Me and Mike and all of us guys, we miss you. Call again, Robbie. Thanks,
buddy. All right, thank you much.
This is Dr. Ray.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about Encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples, disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, tomorrow at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
From Karen Kingsbury Productions comes Someone Like You.
It's a beautiful morning.
I fell in love with London Quinn in high school.
London.
When everything is lost,
I'm so sorry.
Love will lead you home.
You can't bring her back, man.
Do I look like London?
She always wanted me to find someone like you.
Thank God I do.
Someone Like You. This film is not yet rated. In theaters April 2nd. More information is available at someonelikeyou.movie.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. This is not Look Back Friday's Listen Up Friday, where we're taking your calls, and I'm delighted to be with you. Every once in a while we do this. Andrew Krucek, my producer man, is there. Eric Dumont, call Screamer Man. They are there in Ann Arbor. Just a quick thing before I go to Dale. We are going to St. Louis, and the numbers are very exciting. April 16 and 17, Living Right with Dr. A, the TV show, is going to be taped in St. Louis. That's where we got the venue. You want the details on that, and you want to be in the audience, and you'd like to sign up for 1, 2, 3, 4 shows, 2 shows each night, 5:30, 7:30, I believe, 5:30, 7:30, I believe, 16th, 17th, which is a Tuesday and a Wednesday. If you'd like to be in the audience, we'd love to have you. You'll be on EWTN, season number 14. We will be taping this. We'll have some great guests and a lot of fun with the audience. Audience asks questions. Audience claps when they're supposed to clap. Sometimes they don't. That's why we have security remove anybody who doesn't clap. That said, go to catholicradio.org/Dr. Ray, and it'll pop up, and it'll show you where you can sign up. And because we have to know, have an idea who's coming, because we feed people in between the shows, and a lot of folks who just sign up for the first show end up hanging around, and we feed them. Okay, so that'll be doing that. Dale's asking a great question, because if the organism that needs repaired is the very organism that's damaged, how does that work? Hi, Dale.
Hello, Dr. A. Hey, first off, I had called you once before, and I was wondering if you had made a New Year's resolution to quit teasing Miss Tomio.
No.
I'm wondering if that. Oh, you broke that already?
Oh, I made the resolution. I think it was midnight, January 1st, and then by the time I woke up, it was gone. Yeah.
It was gone already.
It was gone, yeah. It was her show.
You explained that right. It's about depression. You know, the same organ you're depressed about, or you use whatever, is the same one you got to try to work the problem out with.
Well, there's two levels here, Dale. Here's where I think you're getting confused. A certain percentage of depression is, to make it simple, biochemically based. In other words, there is something wrong with either the structure or the chemical interactions in the brain. Actual pathology in the brain.
Okay.
That's a small percentage. That's not the major percentage of most depressive experiences. Okay. Secondly, we have no real test to figure out when that is, unless there's actual structural damage or something going on in the body that can be identified. For the most part, when somebody goes to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and says, I am depressed and here is what I'm doing and thinking and acting in my life, the decision as to what kind of depression it is, biochemical, they used to call it endogenous, or life, which they used to call exogenous, has to be made on the basis of a diagnosis by symptoms. So there's real no medical test where we can say, oh, Dale has got a diseased brain that's causing his depression. Now, that said, if, in fact, we can establish somehow, some way, under a good assessment, that your brain biochemically isn't working right, medication can help. It truly can. But if you've ever seen a seriously biochemically disrupted brain, looking at the individual, it is, oh boy, it's pretty clear. I mean, they're almost non-functional. All right, they are so constricted, and they are so shutting down in so much of their life. That's the first thing. So that said, now let's say it's not. Let's say because of Dale, the way he looks at life, the decisions he's made, the kind of thinking he has, all of this stuff has come together to make Dale be depressed. You could still use your brain. The brain is able, if it thought you into depression, it can think you out of depression. It's not damaged. You've just been using it wrong.
So if it's been going on for 50 years, you think it might be just thinking of it wrong even after all that time?
Have you been on medication for
50 years? I take a Celexa, it's called,
okay,
for medicine, and I don't know whether I should continue it or not.
Well, there's research that indicates, for some people, a combination of medication and good cognitive behavioral therapy, looking at the way you look at life, looking at the decisions you make, looking at how you run your experiences, looking at how you interpret people, looking at how you interpret events, all of that can be adjusted. And to the degree that you adjust it, see, you know, it doesn't surprise me, Dale, that you say I've struggled with this for 50 years, and here's why. Because if, in fact, you don't alter the way you've been thinking and acting in a better direction, then it would make perfect sense you've been doing the same stuff for 50 years.
Yeah. Why don't you come to Minnesota and set up a little shop for a month or so?
Well, depression is, right along with anxiety, the number one reason that people seek therapy. It's the number one reason.
Yeah.
And most depressions are not biochemically based, despite what despite what the commercials on TV tell you, depression is a disease. In most cases, it is not. The brain is not malfunctioning. It is the individual is using the brain in a lot of ways to think in ways that cause them problems. A lot of problems. I see it all the time. And people come into my office with various levels of depression. And as we talk, I find out exactly how they're looking at life, how they're looking at people, how they're looking at themselves, how they're looking at religion, how they're looking at their spouse, whatever it is. Just a quick example. I'll get people in my office who are very, very depressed over the direction of their adult children. And in their view, they're failures. They caused this. Well, that's irrational. That makes no sense. That's not true in many cases. And what I have to do is get down to the root of that thinking and try to show them that thinking is erroneous and they need to somehow get past it. And if they would, they wouldn't be as depressed. Dale, thanks for the call. Call again. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me, everybody. Crushing up against the time. I got to run. 10 seconds. That's when the music starts. Walk with God. And that'll help you. That'll help you, in many cases, be less depressed.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.